Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We have the Dr. Al Atkinson that's joining us, and we're going to be chatting about knowing your worth, paying your employees and your staff, and knowing like how much to negotiate. So are you ready to do this, my friend?
I'm born ready. Right. So, I don't know that I have your energy right now. Boy, you just kind of like fired up. You went from first, you're flying.
Yeah, this is how we roll. In the words of my friend Montel Jordan, this is how we do it. So, well, to our listeners about Dr. Atkinson, he's a veterinarian with 40 years of private practice experience treating dogs, cats, pocket pets for a variety of conditions. He's board certified from American Board of Veterinary Practitioners since 1992, and he has experience in case reviews for malpractice claims, and he has provided in-court expert witness testimony, which I am going to ask him a little bit about that too, because I do think that's very cool, unique in our profession. I do like to share kind of with our listeners, like all the different paths and different things that we do in vet med, because it's like, it's just endless. It really is, you know? But before we get into that, let's chat about this. You know, you have this one quote: if you pay your employees peanuts, you wind up with monkeys.
Yeah, I stole that from a friend that used to help me with my computer work way back in the 90s. When computers were just kind of coming in, early 90s, late 80s, actually. And that's what that was something he said once. And it just kind of stuck with me. Unfortunately, the phrase stuck with me, but the actual implementation of it didn't stick for quite a while. But it's something to come back to haunt me over the years when I've had practice, realizing and looking back, it's like, you know, if you really want to get good, solid people, you have to pay them what they're worth. You have to pay them so they have a living wage. You have to pay them what it takes to actually work for you and then have a life outside of work. And if you don't do that, I mean, even if they wanted to stay, they can't, because they just can't afford it. They have to go. I had many people that left. And of course, San Diego's a slightly different market with the cost of living, but they would come from Georgia or Arkansas or other areas where the cost of living was half. They would come out, and then I would pay them what I thought was a normal acceptable wage salary. But it really wasn't. And then they would leave. And I wonder why they're going. And I get someone else and do it again. So looking back, it's go pay them up front, get the right people, train them, pay them what it takes to make them happy and keep them. You just, otherwise you really do. You wind up with people that are, you get what you're paying for, so to speak.
Right. I live by this mantra when I was hiring, is like, I hire attitude and train for aptitude. Yes. And so when I know that I have some rock star person, I was like, man, she's got incredible client service, or he's got really good rapport with people. That is almost priceless versus me showing them like, yeah, let me show you the software system. Let me show you how to place a catheter in. I think that is so valuable in this day and age, knowing that people have these great client service skills that you can train them up on. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you nailed it. And that's really the number one, is hire for their attitude, train them. Because you can train people to put in a catheter, where your drugs are in the hospital, how to assist you in surgery, how to, et cetera. But you can't train them to come in with a smile. You can't train them to be personable. You can't train them to have a good work ethic. You can't train them to have those things. They come to you with that, and it's kind of, it's locked. So you want to find those people that you can work with, you like to be with, that you think your clients will be with. Can they work with your other employees? Are they, and then take them and then train them, and train them adequately. And that's you nailed it. That's really the, I had over the years, I've had several technicians who I think their technical skills were pretty darn good, but they weren't working with the rest of the team, and they really weren't effectively interacting with clients. in a positive way. They kind of like, if you put them in a laboratory and just let them do their thing, they would, you know, they would excel. But if you try to work with other people or with clients, it would kind of fall apart. And so, you know, you just got to train, get the people you need for what you need. Just like you said, I mean, that's key.
Yeah. And I agree. It's like, you know, when you want to have your internal customer service just as strong as your external customer service. And part of that is paying them well, like knowing their worth. So if you were to have an employee, Al, that says to you, you know, Dr. Atkinson, I really love working here. I love what I do. I just don't think I'm getting paid enough. What are some pieces of advice you can give to the listeners out there if they have an employer that approaches them with that?
Yeah. And if anybody is listening that actually used to work for me or knows me or whatever, it's like, I want to make it real clear. This is not like, oh, I am so smart. I just came down from the mountaintop. You know, these are things that I've learned from serious hard knocks over the years and wish I'd have known them a lot sooner. But the deal is, I remember I would try to find out what's the average. I'd call around to other hospitals. What are you paying your technicians? What are you paying your receptionists or assistants? What are you paying? And I'd try to get like a range. And I'd say, all right, I'm going to stay in that middle, maybe the upper middle of that range. And I thought, okay, I'm doing great. And people would come, people would go. And it's like, well, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And the deal is, it's just to make up numbers. But, you know, if someone was to say the average, oh, the average is 15 to 17. Now, knowing what I know now, I would be getting somebody and saying, I'm going to give you 18 or 19. And that's what I'm going to start you with. And they'd probably be going, is there a trick? Am I getting pumped or what's going on? And it's like, no, this is what I want. This is what I want to pay you. This is what I want you to do. I like your personality. I like your, what seems to be your work ethic. And I'm going to train you up on these things. But I would also add this. It's not like, well, I'm going to sit back and coast. But what I expect is I expect excellence. And I'm going to pay you more than you probably could get anywhere else in town. I'm going to pay you more than that. And I'm going to hopefully try to train you and treat you with respect and feel that you are a part of this hospital and its development. But and we'll have reviews, and I'm going to tell you if I feel like this is happening. And if you don't match up to that, I'm going to have to let you go. So, I mean, I think it's, you have to let them know that up front in advance. I'm paying you more. I expect more. Let's talk about it. And whatever I can do to coach you for success, I want to do. But if you can't meet up, I got to find someone who will. And then you pay for that and you get those people. So you just don't get mediocre people and paying mediocre salaries. Pay more and everybody's happier.
Right. I love that. It makes me think of two things. One is when somebody does come in to ask for a raise, to your point, it's nice to kind of like almost set like an expectation or a review in like 60 days or whatever to see what the outcomes or expectations are. Like, have we increased the production of what you were saying? Like, I know that I can do better. I can, you know, I'd be happy to do catheters. I haven't done catheters before, but I know if I get paid more, I'll be able to do it. And you kind of like review that to be like, wow, that's fantastic. Like, you're able to successfully do catheters. Like, yeah, I'm getting my money's worth, essentially. You feel empowered. You feel like bonded to the practice, right?
Oh, absolutely.
People
that work for you want to feel like they're contributing. And I can address some of those things too. Something I learned and figured out again by doing it all wrong 100 times. And then finally the 101st time I get a Dalmatian and I also got it right. But it's you've got to take the people, train them, make them not just think they're a part of your team and decision-making, but that they are a part of the team and the decision making. For instance, and I sort of ramble on a lot of this, but again, anyone that knows me goes, he's rambling again. But but it's, if someone gives you an idea, you can say, oh, that sounds nice. Oh, that's great. All right, I'll think about it. And then if nothing happens with it, they're kind of going, why am I even telling them anything? Well, but why am I even wasting my time? I mean, he says one thing, but doesn't do it. So what I did do in the later years of a practice is I would solicit ideas from people and I'd say, let's try it. Let's see what happens. You know, you're in charge of that. You tell me what we need to make this happen. Let's see what gives. These are our metrics to see if it's really working, and whatever that might be, client satisfaction, which we would do client satisfaction surveys. We'd ask about a lot of stuff and find out, is it working? And if it is, you give them kudos in front of the rest of the staff, tell them thank you, let them know that what they said is you're doing it. It's a part of it. And again, I say all these things. I've had two hospitals. I'll put up three fingers there for a second. I've had two hospitals, but only a third cup of coffee, but it is half calf, but I feel like you drink twice as much.
Perfect.
Yeah. All right here, all of the kidneys, but I don't even know what I'm saying, but you just need to, these people just need to know that they're empowered, that you're listening to them, and that they're getting paid what it takes to have a good living. Again, I can't tell you how many, and it didn't hit me. It didn't really hit me. I'd have employees that I thought, well, these are pretty nice people. They're enjoyable. They're fun. And then they say, you know, I have to leave. You're leaving. And they say, and I'd think, oh my God, I hope they're not going to another place in town. And they weren't. They were going back to Georgia, to Arkansas, to Texas, to areas where the cost of living was half. And because they just couldn't afford to stay with me. I just foolishly let good people leave. And I learned that, and I've seen that in other businesses, veterinary and non-veterinary, where the staff is great. And I've talked to the people that are the owners of the business, and it's, you hear the same thing every time. It's just, you walk into it and you go, this is a wonderful place. I want to work here. And you talk to the owner and they go, well, I train my people, I pay them, and I'm nice to them. And it's like, wow, those don't sound like secrets. Those would be some things we should just do, but they seem to be secrets. Just do those things. And you might think you'll make less money. Oh, I can't give away all the profits, which, you know, when you look at the numbers, and especially if you're starting a practice and you're looking at, oh, these are my bills, are just ominous. But in the big scheme of things, if you have good staff and they're happy to be there, And they know that what their contributions are being used, or at least being tried, they're going to work harder, and overall at the end, the bottom line will be better, and everybody's happier. It's just one of those things that it seems intuitive, but also when you look at a bottom line numbers, I can't afford to pay more. The real answer is you can't afford not to pay more.
Yeah. And I know I got to give a shout out to my friend, Danielle Lambert. Danielle, I know you listen. So shout out to you, because I learned a lot from her from Snout School. But she talks a lot about, you know, transparency, you know, like wages transparency, like even posting it. It shouldn't be. I absolutely agree. I don't think it should be like a hidden thing. I think it should be known, like, here's what we're charging, or here's what we're, you know, the cost of wages are for support staff or whatever, doctors, so forth. But for the support staff, because when you were just talking earlier of like calling other hospitals around, I don't think it should be this hidden thing. Because I feel like, you know, we as a profession are trying to do better, you know, by, you know, keeping these incredible veterinary professionals empowered, paying them well so they don't leave this profession, because they, you know, they enter from their heart, but we also got to make sure that they have a really good cost of living for themselves too, right?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, there's that phrase, you know, hey, find something you love to do and you'll be happy the rest of your life, or it won't be working. You go, okay, that's all well and good, but, you know, what do I tell the bank when they want to have my mortgage? What I told the grocery store, what do I do when I haven't had a vacation in 2 years? What am I going to do? You know, and when all my clothes come from the Goodwill, what do I do there? And the answer is, you know, it's, you suddenly, it'll lose some of its allure if you're just living like that. You have to make it for, and I say, I've been kind of maybe addressing this toward the lay staff, but veterinarians just as important. We've done the same thing. It's what are the average veterinarians getting paid? Well, that's what I'll pay my person. It really should be more. It should be more. This is kind of like I am a grandfather. This is like a grandfather telling, you know, the grandkids, you know what I learned when I was a kid, and, you know, do this. And why do they know that? And why do we know that? It's because, you know, we've seen it. We've tried things. They don't work. You look back in your life and you go, you know, I just was watching a movie the other day. It was like somebody wrote a letter to themselves. You know, it was like a letter to their earlier self.
And I like that. Yeah.
It's like, what would you have written yourself? And it's like, you know, it's those kind of things. And think about that. And it's sounds silly, but it really is. There are things that pay dividends and you can't roll the clock back. And you hopefully can learn from people who've gone through it, realize the mistakes. And then some of it is just some of it's a leap of faith. It's like, I can't pay more because I'll make less and I won't pay my bills. You go, right. Well, that's probably not going to happen. If you manage things well and you have a nice tight staff, again, to think of it this, if you have the right people, instead of paying 10 people mediocre wage, you might be able to pay 7 people a really good wage, higher than average, and you're getting just as much done. I mean, more done, and everybody's happier because they're all working together and they all know that everyone's pulling together. So, So that's another thing. It's maybe a smaller staff that's working better, more efficiently, and with more dedication. Everybody here knows they've had us, if this had a practice, or even if you haven't had a practice, you know, the employee who hides in the closet or acts like they're, you know, acts like they're doing something and they're really not. And,
right.
And, you know, they go in the bathroom for 30 minutes with their phone. And you go, you know, either you have a real medical problem or you got to get out of there.
Yeah.
And those people just need to be gone. Everybody knows who these people are that are at work. Everybody knows them. You just get the right people, train them, reward them, praise them, acknowledge them in public. Another thing was, you know, I've got 1,000 of these stupid phrases, but it's, you know, reprimand in private, praise in public. And you have your productive staff meetings and you praise people that are contributing and doing things and let them have their time in the sun. And that means, it doesn't buy a loaf of bread, but it does mean as much or more than money.
Yeah.
Is to have praise and know that they have worth.
Yes. It's exactly what we were just talking about. Knowing your worth, especially for the greater good of the team and workflow efficiencies and the animals at the end of the day. This is awesome. So as we wrap up, I do want to ask you a final question, kind of completely different than what we've just been talking about. But I do want the listeners to have a little bit of insight from your experience as being an expert witness. Uh-huh. So tell the listeners a little bit about what that's been like for you.
Well, it's been enjoyable. And so what I've done is I have only represented the veterinarian. I haven't represented the other side. So the bottom line is if there's malpractice cases and somebody's suing some veterinarian over for whatever it is, XYZ. And then the insurance company or most of the time it's a law firm will then approach me. And what I'm doing is I do just a general overall record review. And I mean, from beginning to end, preface to epilogue, and this look at, read every word, look at every radiograph, ultrasounds, lab reports, client communications, and just trying to figure out, you know, it's forensic, you know, it's really a forensic kind of a thing. It's trying to figure out what happened. Was something done wrong? Was something done okay, but could have been better? And just trying to render my opinion as to, you know, merits of, let's say, call it merits of the case. Does the person who's suing the veterinarian have any merit to what they're talking about? Or is this basically frivolous? They're just, something didn't go right and they just want to try to find somebody to blame. And it's, I try to be very honest with it. And I tell the attorneys when I take it, I go, I'm going to tear this thing apart and I'm going to try to find anything that I see is wrong. And I'm going to tell you about it and you can take it from there. And I'm not going to make up anything. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And as one attorney, the last one asked me, he said something to the effect that, I mean, Dr. Atkinson, you reviewed all the cases. Yes. And if you'd seen something wrong on this, and I'd asked you to represent us, what would you have said? I would probably say you probably want to find somebody else because you're not going to want to hear what I'm going to say in court. That's what, you know, if I find it, I'm going to report it. I know, because if veterinarians are bad, if they're really, there's a few bad eggs in any profession. If you're doing something wrong, they need to be weeded out We have the, we truly have the greatest profession with integrity, and we're looked up to, and I want to make sure it stays that way. But by the same token, if veterinarians are being unfairly attacked by, you know, because of something that just didn't go right and they want to find somebody to blame, that's what I do. So I review the entire records, everything. And it's not that I have an incredible knowledge of MRI interpretation. I'll then reach out myself to people who say, hey, there's an MRI. I'm reading it for this case. And what do you think? Or if it's an oncology, I'll try to find out who the person is in town who knows the most about oncology. And I'll try to ask them a few, you know, follow-up questions. It's not that you have to be, you don't have to know everything about everything, but being an ABVP is of course, it's a knowledge base in a variety of disciplines. And right. So I'm able to kind of really pick out things that look like could be suspicious and follow up on them.
That's fantastic. Yeah, definitely. Cool thing. So it's, I like that we have that opportunity in this profession to do that as well. So really nice. So Dr. Al Atkinson, thanks so much for joining us. Is there a information or a link or email address for listeners to, we can put it all in the show notes for you if you like. So for them to reach out to
put it in the show notes, send it out to you.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you for all the great work that you do in this profession.
Thanks. Well, it's so much fun. And it's hard to ever, as I get older, it's kind of hard to give it all up because it's just been so, it's been so much fun to me. So I, there's so many aspects of it. I hope the enthusiasm comes through. It's even after 42 or whatever, 40 years, I guess, it still excites me. It really does.
Yes, I can tell. It resonates. That's awesome. We love it. Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate today's podcast. Helps us out substantially. I'll figure out my words eventually. I'll use
toy boat.
We'll see you next time right here at the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.